Musician Matthew Olszewski became a viral video sensation when he performed Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah on the violin shirtless. And now he will forever be known as the shirtless violinist.
Since that first video, audiences are hungry for more, and Matthew is lucky enough to collaborate with his artist boyfriend, Paul Castle, to continue the shirtless video series, which is rather surprising considering Matthew's background growing up in a religious fundamentalist cult.
Today, Matthew Olszewski, the shirtless violinist, bears it all. Listen as Matthew chats with us about growing up in a religious cult that included the Duggars of TLC's 19 Kids and Counting,
why he went through gay reparative therapy,
and how Matthew's dealing with his boyfriend's eventual complete loss of sight. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fabulous people like you. Access the Feast of Fun vaults of over 15 years of podcasting at feastoffun.com/plus and support the podcast you love. Before we begin, let's listen to Matthew Olszewski, the shirtless violinist, cover of Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee's hit song Despacito. Is this the naked violinist?
Well, I can get him. Just a second.
I'll wait.
We'll wait. Let us know when he's there.
You know, it's funny the number of times that people jump to that. It must be the naked cowboy that set a bad precedent.
Well, hold on a second. But you actually are on YouTube known as the naked violinist.
No, the shirtless violinist.
The shirtless. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's but people often get it confused from shirtless to naked, right?
Yeah, they just go one step further.
Because you're a sensible, respectable musician.
Always with the pants on.
Well, I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And you probably have a name, Matthew Olszewski. Am I pronouncing that right?
You got it perfect, Matthew Olszewski.
The shirtless violinist, not the nude violinist.
Not the pantless.
But you can take your clothes off right now if you want to, because it's an audio podcast.
No one will know.
I have been known to do that.
Is that sort of what inspired you? Because I know that young, beautiful, gay, male relationships, you're in bed together, you're naked, and you're just like, I'm going to sing you Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, but I'm going to play on the violin with my big bow
and my tight strings.
It was a warm summer day, and I was in our apartment playing for Paul. And I was on my way to teach a fitness class. And so I was partway partway change. So I only had my shorts on. And we were trying to pick a song to film. And so I played, as you said, Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah before I got a shirt on. And that was kind of what sealed it for him. He's like, this is great. That's a beautiful song. And this is how you need to do it. And I laughed, threw on a shirt, and ran out the door because I was already late to class.
Were your first attempts at making videos with you and your boyfriend more modest, like filming each other with your cell phone?
We did. You know, the first couple of videos that we tried was just Paul with an iPhone, me recording into a laptop. without even a microphone hooked up to it. And we put those out. They were well received. They've now since disappeared. But yeah, Hallelujah, which is now the earliest video up there. Yeah, we actually got some friends to film. I found an audio engineer who agreed to record me for free because we did not have a budget at that time. And so, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
How do you decide what songs to cover? Because I know I'm looking here at like Beauty and the Beast, La La Land, Chandelier, I Dream a Dream from Les Mis. It's pretty much the music that you work out to, isn't it? Because certainly is what I listen to myself.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's really a potpourri of genres all over the place. I love soundtrack, Broadway, pop, and classical. So I've just wanted to mix it up and try different things. Sometimes we're trying to time a movie that's coming out, trying to hit it like with Beauty and the Beast. We knew the live action movie was coming, so we did our own version of Beauty and the Beast. That was our first video to kind of go viral for us. I think it's almost at 500,000 views. Wow. So after that, we decided we're going to do Disney. And so that little gay love story that we told through Beauty and the Beast inspired us to do that with Cinderella, The Little Mermaid. And actually, next Friday, there's another Disney fairy tale coming out.
What is it?
It is going to be, I can't tell you.
Okay, well, I'm not interested in that.
I don't want to know that.
You're like a grinder hookup is like, shows you the dick and says, I'm not interested.
I have this huge guessing game going online right now where people are trying to guess.
It is.
So give us some hints.
It's a 90s Disney classic, and we started with eight Disney princes, well, loosely, Disney male characters, and every day we're eliminating one. So we eliminated Quasimodo yesterday, and today Simba got eliminated. So, and I'm posting this up on Facebook and Twitter and my Instagram stories. So people are guessing, and they definitely want me to be Tarzan. I don't know if they actually think I'm going to be Tarzan on the next video, or they just like his outfit.
Or lack thereof.
Lack thereof, yeah. Mm-hmm. The simplicity.
Well, that little loincloth.
That strategy sometimes backfires because, if you tie yourself a launch on a video on YouTube to, say, a new film or a TV show, and the film or TV show is terrible, then it does nothing to promote your video. Like, we released a Cooking with Drag Queens tied to promote Fox's live action of the Rocky Horror Picture Show just for Halloween, and everybody was like, this sucks. Not us, but
not us,
the Fox version.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible,
with Laverne Cox trying to do her best Tim Curry impersonation, and it was just a situation. I was like, sometimes you just have to follow your own drummer. You have to follow your own metronome.
But your stuff is tried and true, though, isn't it? Like, you're doing the classics. I mean, you don't do speculative things.
Yeah, we've learned to stick with the classics. Like, don't try to guess that something that no one is familiar with will be popular. And thank you, Disney, for redoing everything as a live action, because that's going to keep us going for quite a while. Any of that stuff, everybody's heard. Everybody loves the song. So there is going to be a little bit of attention around that.
Is your boyfriend also a musician, or he's just kind of your spiritual advisor?
He is a visual artist. He actually paints acrylic paints. Paul Castle Studio is where you can look at all his beautiful artwork. But he's legally blind. At the age of 16, he was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa and is slowly losing his sight. So he's down to about 15% of his sight left. In fact, when we met, like on our third date, I was like, he was like, what have you always dreamed of doing? I was like, make music videos. He was like, I've always wanted to be the next Steven Spielberg. But when I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, I gave up on that because I knew I was eventually going to be blind. So I said, well, okay, let's just make music videos. You direct and edit them. I'll play the violin and let's just have fun doing it.
So is it a race for time before he loses his vision completely to make these videos?
It is. Yeah. Wow. It's progressing very slowly. And we don't know whether it will progress just extremely slowly. For some people, it can suddenly start to progress very quickly. But we do know there is a limit on that, his ability to do that.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is.
And I imagine in a lot of ways, there's an ironic element here because you're not just known for your music, you're also known for your looks.
Yeah, I remind him that he doesn't appreciate the way I look as much as he should.
Well, he uses his hands. He gets to feel you.
he's like, is that you? I'm like, no, I'm sitting on the other side of you.
Yeah, it's like, that's somebody else, sorry.
Well, he continue to paint then and work on his art?
He does. Yeah. Part of his genetic eye disorder is he's losing the ability to collect light. And so things are becoming dimmer and dimmer. So he uses a lot of really bright lights to paint. Painting on smaller canvases as opposed to giant ones is easier. If he takes a picture of his painting and looks at it on his phone, that enables him to actually see the entire thing at once. Because with his eyes, he can't actually see his entire painting.
So it is sort of like using a drawing tablet for people who are graphic designers from 10 years ago, where you drew on the tablet, but you looked at the monitor, and you had to sort of learn how to work by... You couldn't look at your hand as you were drawing. You had to look at the screen.
Yeah, he may get to that point. Mm-hmm. I know with sketching, he's moved to an iPad because sometimes pencil on a paper didn't have enough contrast for his eyes to pick up, whereas a glowing tablet screen allows him to actually see what he's sketching. So,
have you gotten more comfortable with? I mean, you're obviously, you're a fitness instructor. You're somebody who works really hard on looking the way you do. It's not something you accidentally stumble upon. But still, like, I was reading that when you first started filming these videos, you would, like, hide from cars in between takes, and now you're just, like, walking around naked all the time.
Semi-naked.
Yeah, you know, I was extremely... I grew up in an extremely conservative family, homeschooled, very, very repressed, homosexual, and... Part of the religious upbringing that I grew up in was modesty. Modesty at all times. Women were covered from ankle to neck to wrist. And there were times when I was encouraged to swim with a t-shirt on. To really take my shirt off to just be looked at was something I was very uncomfortable with at first. I'd been going to the gym for years. In fact, it was kind of something that was... allowing me to, when I first came out, to really just put my energy into something. And so fitness was one of those things that I really used almost like therapy to help myself. But to take my shirt off in front of people was just not something I had done. And yeah, we have, early video footage of Paul trying to film me. And every time a car drives by, I duck behind the bushes and talk in this nervous high voice that's extremely embarrassing.
So you're like, nothing's wrong. What were your early workouts like when you first sort of started coming out of the closet and started taking control over your own body again?
Well, that's one thing I'd always wanted to do was go to the gym and work out and take care of myself. So I started with lap swimming and did a couple years of lap swimming. Really loved that. And then I decided that I wanted to add weight training on. So, yeah, that was the first few years was lap swimming early in the morning and then later in the day some weightlifting.
So when you were in, because you describe it as a cult, the religion, the environment you grew up in, the religious environment.
So I was homeschooled from kindergarten and had a really wonderful first 6 years. And then at the age of 12, my parents heard about this guy named Bill Gothard. He had a homeschool program called ATI, which sounds wonderful because it's the Advanced Training Institute. Who doesn't want to get advanced training? And he had a very charismatic personality. He toured around large cities and did conferences and just kind of taught his version of what Christianity was. he was non-denominational. People loved him. And then when he came out with this homeschool group that you could just go a little further into his teachings, my parents just kind of found that irresistible because his advice and kind of teachings were so good. So we ended up in what is really a cult. He's had sexual allegations brought against him now, and he's stepped down from leadership currently. But there was a lot of hierarchy taught. The father was the head of the home. The mother was under him. The children were under him. And you were protected by God only when you obeyed all those kind of authority structures that were over you. It was a chain of command. There was a lot of abuse.
So basically, like, if you violated God's core principles, horrible things would happen to you, like get a lawsuit and lose your cult following.
Yeah.
So in a way, he was a prophet, you know, because he lost everything.
Well, were your parents religious, like, before they went into this, or did this ATI kind of radicalize them?
They had grown up Catholic, and then through college, just kind of become agnostic, and then post-college became involved with this non-denominational little Christian group, and it was through the influence of of the church that they heard about this man. They attended one of his conferences, and then as they kind of got involved and swept away by his personality, that they decided, hey, he's even got this homeschool group. Let's explore that.
And so when you were doing the homeschooling, is that when you kind of came out as gay and your parents sent you to reparative therapy, or did that come later?
So yeah, I remember very clearly, you know, some of the educational material that we were reading as kids talked about. I remember one of these books, they're called wisdom books, that we would read through. And one of them was about Sodom and Gomorrah. And I remember just reading about these Sodomites and what horrible people they were, that God destroyed an entire city, like everybody, just because there was a couple of Sodomites there. And that was the terminology. We didn't even call them homosexuals. And they were an abomination.
But did you know what a Sodomite was? Did you know it was like, oh, that's when a penis goes up an ass?
I kind of knew what it was.
I mean, how was that explained to you guys, you know?
Well, that's a good question. I don't remember, because it was definitely explained in very careful terms.
So it's more like code for being a sissy.
Yeah, it was kind of, a lot of code. And I remember thinking, like, oh, wow, I am definitely not one of these people, because I am a good kid. You know, I was 13, 14. I'm a good kid, and that's not me. I do enjoy the underwear models in the JCPenney catalog, the men, but I am not, you know.
You didn't want a dick up your butt. And I remember very clearly, like, in high school, like, people asking me, is it true? Like, because it was really hard for me to hide that I was gay, and they would come up to me and they'd be like, is it true that, like, all homosexuals want dicks up their asses? And I'm like, that sounds like an urban legend. I was like incredulous,
you know? Then you fit that carrot up there, and then you're like, hey.
Well, that was much later. Oh, you know, okay. This is in college, but in high school, people were like adamant that, you know, that gay men wanted dicks up their butts. And I just found it just sounded so outrageous and far-fetched to me. As a teenager,
I remember someone accusing me of being gay within this group, and I just laughed afterwards. I just thought that was the funniest thing they could say. I mean, of course not. I mean, I like, you know, I'm attracted to men, but I'm not gay.
But it's funny, because we live in a world now where any teenage person can Google and easily know that, you know, not only a lot of gay men enjoy anal sex, but straight people do too, and it feels good.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do it right, and lots of lube. So Bill Gothard of the Advanced Training Institute, he had a lot of core principles that he didn't want his followers to violate. And one of them was selling and buying Cabbage Patch dolls.
Yes.
Which I think that's something you were denied. So you couldn't have any toys. Mm-hmm.
There were certain toys that were not good influence.
Why was the Cabbage Patch dolls I mentioned specifically, as opposed to any other kind of toys?
I don't remember why, but I just remember that somehow they had demonic influence. They were like really bad to have in your home. And I remember stories that he would tell about people that had a cabbage patch doll. Things started going wrong. They got rid of it, and then things got better.
It was that like having like a Ouija board or something.
Yeah. It sounds like the episode of The Dark Side where the woman gets attacked by the little demonic doll that she has.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Karen Black.
Karen Black, yeah. Which is on YouTube. You can watch it. It's hilarious. It's
terrifying. So when you went to conversion therapy, like how did that come about? Was it something you went on your own? Did your parents discover you were gay and were like, you're going to this? You know, the reparative therapy, conversion therapy. I mean, you might as well just call it homosexual torture, right?
Yeah. Well, so we, late teens, we left the Bill Gothard's group, thank goodness, and kind of went back to Catholicism, which is where my parents had started. And so one of the things that Catholics seem to do is go on these silent retreats. And I thought, wow, that sounds wonderful. So I went on a silent retreat, and it was there at that silent retreat that I, for the first time, really embraced and dealt with the fact that I was gay, and that was something that was part of me and who I was, and I couldn't keep ignoring it. So really, for the first time, I looked it straight on, and my spiritual director was incredibly helpful with that. He would meet with me 1 hour every day. I wrote this tremendous amount. I filled this huge journal full of me really writing to myself and talking to myself and coming to terms with this. And it was very special to me. That was a unique experience. I'd never had that. So I brought that journal home and I thought, there's no way my mom should ever find this. So I duct taped it to the underside of my dresser, thinking that that was completely, you know, unfindable. And I was gone performing with an orchestra, and I got a call, and she had found that journal. And it was really beyond the point where I could deny that I was gay based on the fact that she'd read everything I'd written.
Oh my God.
So that was one of the things, was she was like, okay, you need to do reparative therapy. And at this point, I knew that things were kind of over and I needed to buy time because I needed to really leave. So I agreed to go, and I showed up at the reparative therapy conference, and no one was repaired. I mean, no. They were all very gay, and they were just depressed. You know, they were really sad men who were repressed, who were denying themselves who they were. And there was just this horrible, acrid air of depression that hung over the entire conference. And
gay and happy?
No, it was like a bunch of really sad gay men.
That's sad.
You know, and we could have, you know, been having fun.
And so was it just like over a weekend kind of thing?
Yeah, it was just over a weekend. I went home and I said, you know, I don't think this works. To buy a little more time, I agreed to read one of the books on it called The Battle for Normality. And again, I remember saying to my mom, like, okay, so this book says the reason you're gay is you had an under-involved dad, over-involved mom, you weren't popular at school, and you weren't good at sports. So I'm saying, not all four of those things are true, but let's just say they were. Then what? The book doesn't say anything like that will cure you. It basically just says you need to be single and celibate for life.
That's no fun.
No. I tried that. It was not
fun. That sounds awfully square, you know? It's like... Like, you know, I don't know, maybe it sounds to me, but it's like, do Latinos or like people of color send their kids to, it sounds like a very white Anglo-Saxon thing to do, you know, to send your kids to reparative therapy.
Maybe it is, you know, it was a pretty white group, now that I think about it. So I came home from that, you know, and things did not go well. They went from bad to worse very quickly. And I escaped out of my bedroom window and left.
And what's your relationship like now with your parents?
So through post-Bill Gothard's group that we were in, my parents' marriage really, you know, that affected the family, everything in a really bad way. And so they ended up divorce. I hadn't talked to my dad in a while. So I actually just left my mom, and she and I don't really have contact to this day. But after I left, I recontacted my dad and became a huge part of his life. He and I talk almost daily. I love him to death. And it was funny when I came out to him over the phone, he said, that's funny. Like a week or two ago, I was thinking that maybe one of you kids are gay because, you know, I haven't heard from you in years. Your mom kind of cut off our relationship. And he said, I thought one of you could be gay, but it would definitely be Matthew.
So they knew it would be you.
Yeah. So, yeah, he wasn't surprised. So I was
So right now you have a good relationship with your dad, but with your mom, you don't have a good relationship, which is kind of unusual, I think, for a lot of people, isn't it? Because typically we're closer to our moms.
Yeah, you know, I was definitely closer to her growing up, but this kind of you know, what transpired really separated us, and that's continued.
Mm.
What's your dad think about your fabulous chiseled body? It's like, son, can you help me get to the gym? Because, you know, that's usually the reaction. It's like once they get over you being gay, so they're like, can you help me work out? And you're like, yeah, it's $30 an hour. I don't know how much you charge. You're a personal trainer, right?
I don't do fitness instruction anymore.
Yeah, it's but you just, did at one point in time, though.
I did. Yeah. It was. I did group classes. So.
And I think, you know, in terms of like the journey that you've faced with dealing with growing up in this cult, the betrayal of your parents putting you in a situation like that, and, you know, just embracing your body and your sexuality, you have a lot to offer as a teacher when you're working with clients in their fitness, because a lot of fitness is not just about, you know, sweating and exercising. It's also about your mind and your feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think for me, playing the violin from the age of 3 really being required to practice that every single day, rain or shine, whether I felt like it or not, it really helped me when I came out and I was ready to go to the gym, that I could really apply that same discipline, that like I would just go every day. You know, it doesn't matter. I practice the violin every day. I go to the gym every day. You know, I won't ask myself ever if I want to. I'll just go.
I had my violin teacher said to me, you don't have to practice every day, only on the days you eat.
Oh, I love that. What a good violin teacher.
Wasn't your violin teacher anorexic?
And she was anorexic, yeah. So basically, I don't have to do anything. Actually, the expression, I'm getting it wrong. It was only on the days you brush your teeth.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Which is a little bit more... creep. And I say that to people. It's like, you don't have to exercise every day, on the days you eat.
Yeah.
And the idea is that in terms of like, you know, playing a musical instrument or fitness or anything that requires it being part of your mind and your body, it's a daily practice.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you asked me what my dad thinks. He's really funny. He jokes about me getting him in a music video for a collaboration, you know, the shirtless son and the shirtless father, but no one wants to see that. I haven't told him that.
I would love that. Listen, Tom Goss wants to see that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see Tom Goss next week. So I'll talk that over with him.
Has Tom Goss not taught you anything? The Santa Claus look is hot, hot, hot.
Oh no, my dad's not the Santa Claus look. He's the skinny fat rail.
He's a dad bod.
I guess so. I don't
That's
know.
Good. Listen, you have to love all kinds of bodies. Make space for everything.
Kind of Skeletor. He's the Skeletor bod.
That Skeletor was hot. Masters of the Universe too. You know, in fact, he had the same mold for He-Man that they did with Skeletor. Only they injected it with blue plastic.
Oh wow! Okay.
And the heads were different, but the everything else was the same.
Well, my dad said he had to unfollow me on Instagram because he said, you know, it was just, you know, he saw me naked as a baby, but he doesn't need to see me without clothes on now.
Well, it's not like your dong's hanging out.
No.
You don't even show your ass.
You can't show dongs on Instagram, though.
You can't, but you can show ass crack.
Mm-hmm.
But not on Facebook, but on Instagram you can. But sometimes they shut down your account anyways. But you're very, you know, it's very, I would say, PG-13.
Yeah, and I'm working to keep it that way.
You know, and part of it is like a lot of your goals is to just be a voice for people to be inspired to make music, to take ownership of their body, and to unconditionally love themselves.
Yeah. I like to tell people that, you know, your instrument is your body, and it's a beautiful instrument that you can take care of and practice and, you know, learn to love. And, you know, that's been my journey, is becoming comfortable with myself. And it doesn't really have anything to do with how you look. You can look anyway and still have to deal with self-acceptance and loving yourself and being comfortable with who you are.
But it helps to have chiseled abs.
I would have thought that. But
it's like, it's okay not to look like the guys in the magazines, but fortunately, I do. Everyone like, oh, you. But do you get any like pushback even from gay people? I mean, you know, you're posting stuff on YouTube, you're going to get haters coming out of the woodwork saying all sorts of mean sissy things.
Well, you know, not really. And surprisingly, my biggest haters are the classical community. The violin channel posted a couple of my videos when I started, and they had to stop because the violin community, the classical violin community, just could not stand me. I had to screenshot some of the comments. They were so delightfully vitriolic that they were just classics that I want to frame.
Yeah, Yo-Yo Ma was like really pissed off. He's like, I just thought that would be funny to say. He probably would like.
Isn't
you.
Isn't he a cellist?
He's a cellist. Yes. But, you know, be like, yeah. So now we have to like do sit-ups too and practice. Oh.
You know, it was funny. I got tagged in a comment after they had told me that they were not going to post my stuff anymore.
Oh. But
a fan contacted me and said, hey, you have to go look at this newest post. I tagged you in a comment. And they had posted something. I won't say who it was, but it was some violinist. And it was really awful. They actually couldn't play violin. But the violin channel had posted this, and one of the commenters said, you know, what are they doing? This is horrible. At least that shirtless violinist could play.
Yeah,
I'd like to see. No, they said naked. They said at least the naked violinist could play.
You know, Isaac Stern. Well,
not naked, not shirtless.
Isaac Stern used to post photos of himself shirtless too, but nobody complained about that.
Oh, wow. I did not know.
I'm just
that.
Joking.
I was going to say, I don't remember.
That would be funny. But, you know, I mean, part of it is that, you know, you want to be known as a musician. And the fact that you're sort of bringing your body into this experience is overshadowing to some degree your musical abilities. And I would say definitely your cover of Despacito is formidable and wonderful and beautiful.
You know, and I think because I had so many years performing with orchestras, chamber orchestras, ballet orchestras, opera orchestras, wearing a tuxedo, that I feel secure. Like, I do know how to play, and I've done that, and I'm okay if people, you know, it gets overshadowed, they don't see it, they think it's just a gimmick, because I've done that. You know, I've played professionally, and now I'm just having fun.
Yeah. Well, do you ever like get into a Henny Youngman violin? Take my husband, please. You know, kind of routine. Like, do you want to like get out of your comfort zone as a musician and a physique model, but get into like cracking jokes or anything like that? Or,
well, I haven't thought of doing stand up.
Well, because I do notice that on your Instagram, at least, and some of your. I'm not sure how they called it, the folders, when the sort of like you're having this guessing game,
yes.
That you're not showing off your body, that it's really, you're wearing a t-shirt. It's really based on the violin and the music.
Yeah. I don't want that to be the sum total. So I do make an effort to wear a shirt. And in fact, I'm even going to film a music video where I'm wearing a shirt. Cause you know, shirtlessness is part of it, but that's not it.
But it's a wet t-shirt.
What are you working on with Tom next week? You're going to be in LA working on something with him?
Yeah, we're going to each film a music video. I'm going to film one for his YouTube channel, and he's going to film one for me. And he is so amazing. Really, really great guy. As you know.
Yeah.
Tom Goss?
Yes,
that?
Tom Goss, you know.
Oh, yes, Tom Goss.
Bears. Well, can you play that on the violin for him and, like, watch him, like,
his face melt? Got the best of me. I said, bears, I'm the remedy. I could do it all night. All right.
I listened to your last interview with him for Snooze Video.
Yeah.
I just, you know, part of it is like, I love Tom's sense of humor and I've been just begging him. And I think, you know, people, LGBT people, but especially gay men who come from oppressive Christianity have this burden of dealing with this oppressive religion that sometimes just colors everything that they do and they're not even aware of it. And sometimes I describe Tom as Bert and the Bert and Ernie dynamic. And his husband is Ernie, right? So, like, Tom's husband is the one who enjoys a beer and eating nachos and relaxes. Whereas, you know, Tom is more like Bert is collecting his paperclip collection. And, you know, things have to be done just right. And he's very disciplined. He goes to the gym and everything. And I think sometimes in relationships, that duality that is really healthy because it actually balances you out.
Yeah, I completely agree. Paul definitely helps balance me out because, you know, I am, like you described, Tom, the extremely disciplined. You know, I love structure. I love discipline. I would structure and discipline and have a spreadsheet for every single thing in my life if I could.
Wow.
And
so Johnny, I'm looking here. Johnny Walsh is not your boyfriend. Paul is the one without the tattoos.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Johnny is the pianist from New Jersey who's collaborated with me. And yeah, Paul is the one without the tattoos. And yeah, he's the one that helps me, you know, kind of relax a little and have a pepperoni pizza once in a while.
Oh, he's going to be like Meat Lovers Deluxe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So do you guys ever get into like a conflict in terms of like things that you want to do? Or is he pretty much like smart enough to just let you, you know, go on your way?
Oh, no. I mean, even just before this phone call, we were kind of battling through some ideas for a new thing. And I say battling in kind terms. He has a very strong creative vision for what we do. And, you know, as do I. And so, yeah, we often kind of have to like hash through things and come to a compromise or get talked into the other person's opinion. So, yeah, it's and that's what I appreciate. I want to be creating with people who challenge me and don't, you know, not just yes men.
I do love the tribute to the Little Mermaid ends with the two of you guys wearing mermaid fins.
Yeah, you know, those were so amazing to wear. What you don't realize is the other half of the beach to the left is filled with people who just gave us the strangest looks while we were filming down on our end. But it was so beloved that actually Cosmopolitan picked it up and did an interview, which delighted me. I didn't know Cosmopolitan would enjoy that, but they did.
So you're basically link bait now.
Yeah.
I'm so good. So do you feel like in some ways, in this, I talk to a lot of people who have success on YouTube and sort of virality, right? Is that you have this vision, you have this drive as an artist, as a musician, and then there's this other pull coming from elsewhere, where it's like, you got to get that million views on that video, so you're going to do something that, just, you know, some people would describe as pandering and not true to your voice or vision as an artist.
Yeah, I hope we never do that. Mm-hmm. We try to be careful and really stay true to what it is we want to do. And I've seen other people do change things up and do the things that do get millions of views, but I wouldn't be okay with that artistically. And sure. I would not feel like the integrity. We do have a video that's approaching a million views. We're really happy for that. It's actually our perfect gay love story, which Paul is in. Aww. It's our own original story. Using Ed Sheeran's, you know, amazing song. And it just tells a little story of two boyfriends texting each other, missing each other. And yeah, we're so pleased that is what's going to be the first to pass a million.
What was that song that Ed Sheeran, Shape of You? I'm in love with your body. Ooh-wah, ooh-wah, ooh-wah. Right? Is that the song that you used? Or?
Yes. Yes.
I love that song. I didn't realize it was Ed Sheeran that had done that, because it sounds very different from his music.
Well, you know, why I picked Perfect over that one was Perfect had more melody.
So was it Shape of You or is it Perfect?
Perfect. We did Perfect.
Okay. Okay.
You sang Shape of You, which didn't have enough melody, I felt. And it was a lot of A-B, A-B, A-B kind of went back. And
it's music to fuck by. You know, when you're pounding the muffin, it's all 1-2-1-2-1-2. Two beats per measure, the second note gets the beat.
Okay. Okay. Wow, you've got this down.
The whole note gets the beat, baby. So, I mean, where do you expect to get out of this? And I guess maybe the better question would be, what has been the most unexpected surprise and pleasure you've discovered from making art with your boyfriend?
Just the reception. You know, we filmed our first video just wanting to do one, and we put it up on a YouTube channel called The Shirtless Violinist. We had one video, and we had maybe 50 subscribers in the first week, and all of a sudden that video got 20,000 views, and we were like, what? So we Googled Shirtless Violinist and found that Pride.com had written, and we were like, wow, how did they even find this video? Like, we didn't know how to add tags. We didn't know how to, you know, get it seen, but we decided let's do another one. And we did another one, and that had three articles written about it. So we just kind of made one video and then a second one and then a third one. And then we're like, okay, people like this. Let's just keep doing it. So I'd say that has been the most satisfying, is the number of people that message me daily. You know, there's over 100 messages every day of people that just love the music. People from Iran and countries where, I mean, it's so sad that they can't live as LGBT people. And I get these beautiful, heartfelt, sad messages from people that just love what we do, love the representation that we bring to the community. That was unexpected. I just thought I'd maybe be making fun videos, making classical music sexy. I never thought that I would be representing our community. I'm deeply honored and feel not 100% qualified to do that.
Well, don't worry. They're going to decrown you soon enough.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I guess the question I'm trying to know is has it changed your relationship to your partner?
Well, you know, it's brought us closer, because it has forced us to work together in incredibly close circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, a lot. So, I think it's brought us closer in the time we've been together, and it's caused us to work through more problems than we would have otherwise, because we're, you know, forced to battle through editing decisions and casting decisions and story decisions and filming decisions, and I'll snap at him. And, I'm just kidding. That never happens.
Well, I think it's important to make art with your partner, because, you know, we live in a very consumer oriented society, and we don't really have a lot of language or skills in developing long-term meaningful, stable relationships. I mean, you know, it's only until recently that we even legally could get married. So when we're able to work on something other than, as that song goes, shopping and fucking. Have you heard that?
I've not heard that.
It's a shopping and fucking and shopping and fucking and sucking and shopping and fucking and watching TV.
I don't know this song.
This is it's from the late 80s, 90s. I forget the name of the musician, but our listeners know this one. But anyways, the idea of that you're wanting to develop this relationship on things that you do. And straight people have, you know, their churches, their communities, they have children. Even straight people need projects to work on together. That's not going to a restaurant, watching a movie, go on a vacation, buying something, you know, and building something together, whether it's a home or a beautiful video or even just planting a garden, can be a really powerful way to bond with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's I love it because we rarely have time to sit down and watch a video together or stream some Netflix. You know, those are kind of these rare and precious moments where we'll watch one episode of something. You know, so often we love this work, so we work around the clock.
So for people who are looking for the song, it's called Bong Folk Song by Bong Water. And it's from the album The Power of Pussy.
Yes.
It's one of those, okay, you know, right-wing conservative Christian anthems.
I think Trump was playing that at his last rally.
He did. He's like, I want everybody to be shopping and sucking and shopping and sucking and fucking. But that's, you know, part of it is like, it's so easy to fall into that consumerist trap because it feels good. It feels like you're accomplishing something. You know, you go to you load up the grocery cart at one of those Target stores and you're like, I got bed sheets, I got some lube, I got some pillows.
Like, things are going all right in the world.
Yeah, you get home, you unpack them, and you're just like, got a beautiful bedroom, and then you have sex and you're done, and then you're staring at each other and you're like, I don't even know who you are. And the only way to know who the other person is to do something together, mm-hmm, to build something.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel lucky that we've been able to bring kind of both of our dreams together and produce something. And, you know, even if it were to end today, I would feel so satisfied and happy with what we've done personally.
Well, it sounds like there is a clock in this project, in this at least in your boyfriend's ability to see what he's working on. But I imagine that this is not just because he loses his vision doesn't mean that he's going to stop and that you guys are going to stop.
No, we're actively working to kind of build our team and bring in more creative people because we, you know, as he, and whenever that is, 5-10 years, as he has to step back a little more, we want a team of people that can step in and, you know, he'll always have amazing creative ideas. I know that. He's nonstop. I can't believe the number of creative ideas he has. Usually I have to say, that one's impossible. We can't do that. No, we can't find them. How are we going to do that? So, you know, he'll always be a part. It'll just, you know, it'll change and morph as with his sight.
Are you ever looking for collaborators? Because I can play the harmonica. And Mark, you can play the tambourine.
I'm working on my gym card.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, honey.
The three of us and Tom.
What?
The three of us and Tom.
Yeah, we could have a jam session like the Country Bears Jamboree. Only instead of robots, it's actual real people that behave like robots.
I'm just run by hydraulics.
I'd be like, welcome to Feast of Fun. Did you ever go to like the Showbiz Pizza or the Chuck E. Cheese's when you were a kid?
Oh, I do remember a Chuck E. Cheese, yeah, as a child. It's kind of a...
Even though you were homeschooled?
You know, I think we had a friend who had a birthday party there.
Oh, yeah. Because I was homeschooled, too. And I think, you know, as you know, homeschooling sometimes gets a bad rap. And I'd like to remind all the Christian kids that were, like, raised homeschooling, at least you learned one thing, is that, you know, unless your parents were, like, drilling Bible verses with you 24-7, that there's, you know, we waste a lot of time in schools, and sometimes the most powerful learning lessons and experiences can just be from us being alone with our thoughts and a good book and a library or, you know, being able to surf the internet and read an article. It's like, those experiences can actually be really transcending for people.
Yeah, I agree. You know, apart from the cult, my homeschooling experiences, you know, before it especially were amazing. I feel so lucky. My parents allowed us to explore and whatever we wanted. We could be creative in any way we wanted. If there was a subject we were interested in, they dove passionately into that with us. you know, and if we excelled at subjects, they helped us learn even more. And if there were subjects that we struggled with, then we could spend more time and they could explore different ways of trying to teach us so that we could grasp it. So, I feel very fortunate. It was some amazing experiences.
And then you said to your mom, I want to study French film theory from the 1800s. Well, that doesn't. And she's like, what? Get out of here. I don't want to read about Avital Ronell and the telephony. And the telephone book. Sorry, that's the name of her a thesis.
So, Matthew, are you performing out, like, shirtless? Do you, like, show up, like, with, like, a symphony and you just come out and, like, you're shirtless and playing the violin?
You know, the performance with the symphony hasn't happened yet. Yeah, I did have a Birmingham Hall over in the UK. They flew me out to perform in Symphony Hall, but it was just me. I did a rendition of Chartist by Vittorio Monti, which is an amazing gypsy, fiery gypsy song in a classical. And they put that on their website and drove me down the streets of Birmingham Pride on a giant video truck. So that's the closest I feel I've come to like performing with an orchestra. You know, I was on the stage, just the orchestra wasn't there. But, you know, that's my hope and dream is to start playing live. I just played in Boise last month to a sold-out crowd who was ecstatic. They were catcalling. They were clapping along. They were crying along. It was unbelievable, the excitement. So, yeah, I do hope to tour.
Is the audience, is it gay men? Is it women? Is it a mix of the two?
Well, my audience is mostly gay men, but when I performed in Boise, it was 99% straight women with a couple of husbands who came along. And
like, all right, they, honey, as long as we get some action tonight.
You know, and I think every man but one came up to me, every husband but one came up to me and shook my hand and said, you are very talented. And there was a line of women that wanted their pictures and autographs and posters and CDs. And so I didn't really know how it would go with straight women. But after that, I was like, okay, this is going to work. This is a thing.
Mm. Oh, that's hopefully they're thinking about you, but with their husbands. Yeah, I'm just kidding. Or maybe not, you know. Matthew Olszewski, it's so good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you guys. This was quite an honor and a treat.
And people can find you on Instagram as the shirtless violinist or just shirtless violinist. Yes. No, the.
Yeah, shirtless violinist on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube.
That's great. And you have, but not .com?
Oh, yeah. And shirtlessviolinist.com is where you can order my calendar, my prints, my CD, and some t-shirts coming pretty soon. Some really horrible classical references that we decided are too obscene, you know, involving F-holes on a violin.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've only got F-holes for you, or is that your... Is that
well, that sounds very Salvador Dali, because he, like, painted, you know, the holes of a cello into a woman's back, and then...
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of the approach you're taking. It's fine art.
Yeah. Is that a bow in your pocket, or are you just excited to see my F-holes? Yeah.
That's good.
Those are the ones that are not making it onto the
team. Do you need me to put some rosin on your bow?
Yeah, I'll rouse in your bow if you'll pluck my strings.
All those years of playing the violin so we can make these sexual innuendo jokes. This is where it's all leading to.
This is it, yeah.
It's like, looks like your strings are really tightly wound. Mm-hmm. I'd like to pick up the tempo a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, you guys too. Thank you so much.
And if you are in Chicago, let's make a little beautiful music together.
Okay, I might be, and I've been asked to do a wedding out there next summer.
Oh, you are? Yeah, isn't the cult, wasn't it based out of LaGrange, Illinois?
Oakbrook.
It was in Oakbrook.
Oakbrook and Hinsdale. It's all kind of like in the same neighborhood, yeah.
So we could go visit them. Do a concert there.
Oh, I should. I should say I'm back. Mm-hmm.
And this time, I'm taking no prisoners. I was like, well, I got a key and a handcuffs. You can come with me if you like.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
You take care and have fun with Tom next week and give him a big hug for us.
Mm-hmm. I will. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Matthew, before we hang up, do we have photos of you?
We have some photos, yeah. Do you want to look at them first?
No, that's fine. Because I can also post stuff from your Instagram account. And the other thing, what city are you based out of so we can tell the listeners?
Seattle.
Seattle, Washington, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, Matthew. Love
you. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Bye.
Matthew Olszewski lives in Seattle, Washington.
You can find him on YouTube and on Instagram as a shirtless violinist.
That's right. And guess what? He's shirtless in most of the things. Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got a calendar out there that might reveal a little bit more.
Well, I'm not wearing anything at all myself. Zip. Oh, that's my hoodie zipper.
It's cold in the sea.
I know. It's so cold. The winter's coming. You know, one thing we didn't ask him was what he's dressing up for Halloween. What do you think he should dress up for Halloween? What should we wear?
He could do, what's his name? Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah,
shirtless fiddler.
Yeah, because you want to. Oh, yeah, he could be a sexy. If I had a how does the song go?
If I were a rich man.
If I were a rich man. I thought about if I had a matchstick. Yada. Isn't there a song in Fiddler on the Roof about matches? Matchmaker.
Yeah, make me a match. That's like a find me a love interest.
That's a musical. You know, I've never actually watched an entire.
Oh, really? They bust us in school to a theater to watch it.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
And you were homeschooled.
No, I wasn't homeschooled. I went to Catholic school.
Well, you went to Catholic school and then they took you
to a theater.
And then you went home at the end of the
day. They only took us to the theater to see a couple movies. And one of them was Jesus Christ Superstar.
Hot.
And one was Fiddler on the Roof that I remember. Otherwise, we would just watch movies in the gymnasium.
I love me some cracked out hippies loving Jesus, baby. Mm-hmm. You got the power, you got the glory, you got the power, you got the glory.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support, so if you're not a Plus member, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen.
Who makes Feast of Fun possible? You do. You got the power, you got the glory, you got the power, you got the glory. Hey, hey, hey. Remember, folks, we got fabulous t-shirts on our store, feastoffun.com/store, and come out of the closet and share your favorite podcast with your friends.
Yeah.
Feast of Fun is available everywhere. Fine podcasts, fabulous podcasts are found, like Apple Podcast. And sometimes we post some of our better shows on our YouTube channel, which is also Feast of Fun. Did you know that?
Yeah, get on it.
Girl, get out of the house and subscribe. Yeah.
You don't have to leave the house to subscribe.
Get with it. Get with the program. That's what Debbie Reynolds said about Liz Taylor.
Said to her when she's like, all these men are after me. She's like, get with it, girl.
Girl, get with it. Yeah. Which you can listen to on our archives at feastoffun.com/plus. You can listen to past interviews with Carol Channing and Debbie Reynolds and George Takei.
And RuPaul.
RuPaul.
And Lady Bunny.
Lady Bunny. That's the thing is, like, if we get to talk to them for an hour, I can sometimes, you know, impersonate them pretty well. But, you know, some people are a little bit more slippery, more intangible. Mm. So can you guys impersonate us? Send us your best impersonation videos.
Yeah, we want to hear it.
And, you know, be like, hey, this is Fausto, and I did Face the Fun.
Y'all have Fry.
Yeah. But, you know, somebody who was imitating me for a while was Trixie Mattel.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a very good imitation. She thought it was fantastic. And I'm just like, listen, I live with a man. It's not a good imitation.
But, you know, she was like going, hunty, hey, hunty. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm imitating RuPaul. Who are we imitating here exactly?
It's all one giant, big, gay mess.
Yes, the rainbow, honey, it splashes around everywhere and spread the love. Remember, love is an infinite source of power. So spread it out, share it.
Like manure.
Yes, and watch the flowers and the trees, the beautiful music grow and climb and reach the skies.
Because to quote Tales from the Hood, that's the shit. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.